Get ready for the Unbodied mini episode. Hi, welcome to the Unbodied mini episode. This is your host, Jeff Sink. I'm so glad to have you here. This is a new type of show that I'm going to be doing, and I'd like to put this out once a month as well, about 2 weeks before I put out the regular Unbodied shows. The way that this show is different is that instead of having one long story that lasts about half an hour, I'm going to have a smaller story, maybe lasts 5 minutes. So I thought I would do this to put out a few more episodes and to whet your appetite for random, scary, funny, horrifying stories, science fiction stories, horror stories, fantasy stories. So here goes. Welcome to the first episode of the Unbodied mini episode. I was inspired to write this first story because of the times, and the weather outside is changing. Winter is finally going away, which, in my opinion, is a very nice thing. So, this first story is called The First Day. Standing on the tile of her home's front hall, a woman with long dark hair threads her arms through her coat and zips it up. She opens her front door and steps out onto the porch. She grasps the doorknob and closes the door, catching one last breath of warm air from the house. She jams her key in the lock, twisting it to secure the deadbolt. She stands facing the door, takes a deep breath, and swivels around to confront the scene ahead of her. Winter has petrified her neighborhood, stricken it with frost. It is a sea of white. It has been snowing for some time, long enough to cake every surface of her home in ice, long enough for hills of snow to cover the lawn like white velvet. The sky is a uniform gray mask, sending down a few tender snowflakes. She examines the icy path to the street. Hadn't she shoveled the walk just yesterday? It has been reclaimed by the storm. She looks up at the sky, narrows her eyes, and begins making her way toward the car. Instantly, a burst of cold wind assaults her. She staggers and brings her arms out to her sides to brace herself. Grumbling, she moves faster to the car. She approaches it, finds the door hidden under the snow, and opens it. She ignores the cold and concentrates on preparing her car, starting the engine to burble and churn, and scraping off the lacy patterns of ice woven onto the windows by the storm. She enters the car, the smell of cold metal filling her nostrils, and eases the vehicle into the street. "Okay, then," the woman says, eyeing the gray sky. "Must get to work." A few fat snowflakes shatter against the windshield. "No," she chides. More snowflakes parachute down to land on the car. Others follow, clustering in little patches, before wiper blades shove them off the windshield. Soon the snow descends at a great pace, like an ivory wall, blanketing everything. Fog flows out from behind corners and around bends. It thickens. The fog gradually consumes the woman's view of the road ahead and replaces it with white. "This needs to stop," the woman says under her breath. The wind strengthens its attack, pulverizing the snow and scattering it everywhere. It whistles and tugs at the woman's car. "I have to get to work. I can't be late again." In her car, the warm air churning from the air vents gasps twice before expiring. The woman twists the dial, but the heat won't return. Then the vents belch out cold air, blowing harder and harder until it tussles the woman's hair and causes her teeth to chatter. She presses her foot down on the gas. "I'm going to work today, damn it!" She hunches over the wheel and squints to see better. The outside is no longer her neighborhood, but a moving, crystalline carousel of snow. She turns a corner and it happens. The road becomes a sea of glass and the car slips. The wheels spin wildly. The vehicle squeals. It lurches diagonally through the intersection, bound for a snowbank. The woman's hands fly to her face just as the car collides with snow. It bobs around on its suspension, wedging itself into the snow. The impact jostles the woman, shakes her to and fro. When she stops moving, she kills the engine, frees herself from the car, and steps out. The storm churns around her, thick and frigid. That's it. I've had enough. I'm tired of the cold and the long nights. I'm tired of the bad roads and being late to work. I'm tired of having dry, chapped lips all the time. I'm tired of winter. She kicks at the sooty snow lodged under the hub of her wheel. No more. No more of this icy bullshit. It should be spring now. The woman glares upward, where snow continues to fall. I mean it! No more winter! The wind rushes by, stinging her hands and face, but she doesn't move. She is frozen, her gaze fixed on the storm. Her hair becomes coated with snow. She and the car are being clothed in ice and frost by the storm. She persists. Snowflakes land on her skin. They collect, increase, and pause on her surface. A moment passes, and they begin to melt away to water. Then snowflakes landing all around her melt on contact. All the snowflakes begin to melt as they fall, converting to rain. The rain seeps into the snowpack, dissolving it. The gutters grow bloated with water, carrying away last autumn's brittle leaves and wrinkled bits of paper. The streets, sidewalks, houses, and trees are left bare and fresh. The wind warms, escorting the fog away. The rain continues. It pulses down from pitch-black clouds, increasing in ferocity. Thunder bellows above, and lightning whips between two clouds. It sounds like cannon fire. The clouds twist and bend as they run into each other. Gradually the sun peels back the clouds to burn away the rain. The wind abates. The woman shields her eyes from the sunlight. She turns to look at the sidewalk, where irregular splotches of water are evaporating, and then to examine the crisp green blades of grass in the nearby yard. A robin lands a few feet from her and scuttles about looking for worms. She looks down at herself, at her drenched clothes and her coat that is altogether too warm for the increasing temperature. Well, I guess I will be late to work after all, the woman thinks to herself as she opens her car door. I can't greet the first day of spring looking like this. So that was my story, The First Day, which is all about spring coming. And here in Utah, at least, spring tends to come pretty drastically. And especially right now, I'm not convinced that it's spring because it's still kind of cold outside. But I'm hoping one day it'll just be nice and sunny. And then from then on out, it'll be nice and warm up and then get too hot. But that's summer. So now I want to have you listen to a piano piece that was written by Joseph Taylor. It is called Germination. That was Germination by Joseph Taylor, played on the piano. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to bring you a second story this week. And the second story is actually a pamphlet that I happened to get from my friends in the future. Yes, I have friends who are far, far in the future, and they often send me bits of, what would you say, little bits of ephemera. And this was a pamphlet that's been going around. Okay, so it's called A Helpful Pamphlet. This pamphlet has been commissioned by the United Nations Council on World Defense in order to better explain recent events and corresponding international laws and regulations. The intention is to answer some common questions and assure the public of our ability to provide leadership in times of need. 1. Background. On August 12th of this year, an extrasolar object defined as MS-3150 entered the atmosphere and collided in a residential neighborhood outside Salt Lake City, Utah, in the United States. No injuries or major damage from the impact were reported, although the object did scratch the side of one resident's vehicle. He subsequently filed an insurance claim and was denied. A geology team from the University of Utah was assembled to examine the object. The site of the crash was cordoned off to prevent souvenir hunters from compromising its integrity. The team found that the object was almost completely destroyed during the impact. What remained was tested and found to be harmless. Contrary to reports from the media, the object did not cause any unusual symptoms or behaviors in those exposed to it. The 12-member geology group simply chose to retire from the public eye at the same time, as did their families and anyone who interacted with them during the 2 weeks they investigated MS-3150. This is not unusual. The object was then sent to an undisclosed location to be stored. 2. Outbreak. On August 20th, the CDC isolated and classified a new strain of flu virus from samples collected in Salt Lake City. Although this new flu, commonly known as Mormon cough, seems to have appeared first in a neighborhood near the impact of the object MS-3150, there is no connection between the two events. A novel flu strain appears somewhere in the world every 2 to 5 years. The emergence of Mormon cough matches this pattern. By the middle of September, roughly 40% of the population of Salt Lake City was infected with Mormon cough, and new cases of the flu began cropping up around the world. This phenomenon prompted the adoption of several new laws in the U.S. and elsewhere to protect the health of the public. 3. The Congressional Health Safety Act. Passed on October 2nd by the U.S. Congress, this law allows for the quarantine of a 50-square-mile perimeter surrounding Salt Lake City. The impetus for this law is to prevent the spread of Mormon cough. Food and other supplies are allowed into the quarantine zone, but no visitors may access the area. Anyone caught trespassing and taking pictures of the flu victims will be sent to prison immediately. Communication with those in the quarantine zone is also limited to email in order to keep the phone lines free. All air traffic and bullet train service in and around Salt Lake City is delayed until further notice. 4. UN Initiative WSE-67. In response to the outbreak of Mormon cough, UN Initiative WSE-67 was passed, calling for the establishment of flu checkpoints in specific regions all throughout the world. These checkpoints will screen for the new virus. Anyone wishing to leave or enter any one of the 20,000 demarcated zones must be screened at the checkpoints. Those who refuse will be forcibly examined. The estimated time to get through these checkpoints is 10 minutes. You are welcome to enjoy a coffee or a soy bar as you wait to be inspected. If you test positive for Mormon cough, you will be sent to a treatment center in Salt Lake City, where you will remain until the flu abates, be that days, weeks, or years. There is no need to worry about travel expenses or lost income, as these will be compensated at an 80-20 differential once you return from treatment. 5. Symptoms of Mormon cough. Although the chances of any individual contracting Mormon cough are negligible, it is helpful to recognize the symptoms. Those with Mormon cough experience dizziness, sore throat, and a loud cough. If you exhibit any of these conditions, please visit one of the flu checkpoints. No deaths from Mormon cough have been reported, and no deaths need occur from this flu if everyone remains proactive and vigilant. On an unrelated note, if you experience any symptoms such as purpling of the skin, massive sudden increase in body size, or the recurring persistent compulsion to gather intelligence about the government and beam that information at a particular point in the sky via plasma wave, it would be helpful to report to a flu checkpoint discreetly. 6. Conclusion. In closing, we would like to emphasize a few points. First, Object MS-3150 had nothing to do with the emergence of Mormon cough. Second, it would be beneficial if everyone forgot about MS-3150 entirely. Meteor strikes on Earth are common. And finally, we would like to reiterate that there are no alien beings on Earth, and there never have been. By focusing on real issues facing the planet, like Mormon cough, we can ensure the continued tranquility of the human population. Thank you for your cooperation. That was a helpful pamphlet written by yours truly, Jeff Sink. Now, finally, before I end the show, I would like to play another piece written by Joseph Taylor. It is called Our Universe. That was Our Universe by Joseph Taylor. And that's our show. Thank you for listening to the first episode of the Unbodied mini episode. I hope you liked it. I'm hoping this is a way for me to get out a couple, at least one more show every month, so that we have two shows per month. Let me know what you thought about it and what you thought of the stories. You can email me at jeff@theunbodied.com. That's GEOFF@theunbodied.com. Also, if you are a writer, if you are a science fiction, horror, fantasy writer, and you want one of your stories featured on The Unbodied, email me. Again, jeff@theunbodied.com. It'd be fun to get some more authors on the show. So, in 2 weeks, I will have another mini episode up, and then 2 weeks after that, I will have the full episode. So keep listening. Thank you so much, and until next time.